Welcome to Shambles Asia Cast, a podcast series. This series is a mixed bag of conversations with educators from both the private and public sectors in Southeast Asia, and from those who have experience working with schools in the region. www.shambles.net/podcasting. In this program, Chris Smith shares an interview originally broadcast on BFBS in Hong Kong early in the 1980s. The subject of the broadcast is Les Clark, who was then a teacher at Island School in Hong Kong, and also a broadcaster. The music in the BFBS program has been removed for copyright reasons.
Welcome to Shambles Asia Casts. My name's Chris Smith. This program's a little bit different than normal. It's actually a recording of an interview that took place in Hong Kong in the 1980s, very early in the 1980s, with a teacher called Les Clark. Now, Les was a teacher at Island School in Hong Kong when I first arrived there in 1978. And this is a program which I think was recorded by British Forces Broadcasting Service, BFBS. And he was asked to do a bit of a Desert Island Discs type program where he recommended some music. I've actually removed the music bit, and I've left the audio in where Les talks a little bit about himself. And I hope you enjoy it. Now, I've actually lost touch with Les, so if anybody knows where he is in the UK, and I think he's in the UK, then please let him know that I've put this recording on air. So I hope you enjoy this, of Les's reminiscences of his growing up and his work in Hong Kong, not only as a teacher, but as a broadcaster.
Where you grew up?
I grew up in Barrow-in-Furness, up in the northwest of England, on the shores of the Irish Sea, within sight of the Isle of Man and the mountains of the Lake District.
Was your family musical? I mean, is there music in your blood?
My mother could sing, loved singing, but no practical musicians in our family at all. A thing I very much regret that I didn't get onto an instrument at an early age and get trained in it.
Can you sing?
I like singing, yes, very much. I'm not a trained singer and I can't read music, but it's fun to take part when the opportunity arises.
And what at school, were you a sporty boy, or what were your interests?
I was a truant, largely.
I can't believe that.
Yes.
Not much sport, a bit of rugby, because that's what we had to do. I was frightened of cricket balls. They're a bit hard and come a bit fast. Playing rugby or football on the red, sticky clay of the Furness Peninsula is not the greatest of introductions to a sporting life.
So when you left school, what did you do?
I went to the Air Force, first of all.
Is that National Service?
It was just before the end of the war. In fact, it was the 14th of August, 1945. And as soon as I joined up, of course, the Japanese decided to surrender. And the following day, they handed over their ceremonial swords. And that was victory in the Far East.
So how long did you spend in the RAF altogether?
3 years.
Happy days? Or?
No, it was time in a blue prison.
Oh, dear.
Shunted from one station to another. Never got fully trained in anything except as a radar operator many, many years after I'd started, and finish up doing any odd job that came along, like running an education service and things like that.
And was that all in England? You didn't get abroad with
the
RAF?
I went to Europe, Northwest Europe, Germany, for 12 months.
Well, perhaps we could come to your first choice of record. What would it be?
One of the first women I fell in love with, and I think I must have been age 10, was Lena Horne. And I've chosen something to start. I think it's a nice start. On a Wonderful Day Like Today.
On a wonderful day like today.
And that was Lena Horne singing A Wonderful Day Like Today. So after RAF, Leslie, what happened to Leslie Clark then?
Well, I went to Cambridge. I'd already secured a place at Queen's. and I went up to Cambridge to read English.
With what in view? Were you then planning to be a schoolteacher?
No, I wanted to become Renaissance man, the educated beast of modern times. I went up just to get educated, as they say. I wasn't planning to be anything at all.
Were you going to write?
No, it wasn't good. I had no idea. I had not the slightest idea what I wanted to do. Like thousands of people who go off to university, they go off to read an arts subject and they have no definite aim in mind at all.
And the 3 years at Cambridge, were they good days?
Oh, that was fun. Yes, great fun. Spent most of my time on the stage, playing about in reviews. Started off with the College Review. Audition was singing a Noel Coward song. So that was great fun.
Did it ever enter your head to try and go professional as an actor?
It entered my head, but there were a lot of people at the time looking for work. There were people who could afford to hang around and not starve in London for quite some time. So I went off and I got married.
As a student?
As a post-student, immediately post-student, yeah.
So presumably you then had to earn an honest penny to keep your wife?
A dishonest penny for quite some time.
What were you doing?
Well, I did all sorts of things. I failed to sell weighing machines in East Anglia. I worked on a building site, worked in a factory. And after a couple of years of that, I decided I'd have to do something permanent, so I started teaching. We needed to buy a pram and different things.
What sort of school was that in?
That was at a grammar school in Manchester, and that was quite fun, because I met there again one of my contemporaries from Cambridge. We worked together in the very first term on a play, which I played one of the leading roles along with the children, and helped to hold it together for him because he was a little bit worried about his play.
Well, I think it's time for the next record. What would that be?
Embraceable You. I don't mean you, I mean just generally Embraceable You. Joe Pass, guitarist. Strange that I should come on late in life to Joe Pass. It was discovered for me by proxy, almost by proxy. My wife went to a concert in London with Joe Peterson and Joe Pass. Embraceable You is by Gershwin, and it's on a tape. Ira, George, and Joe. Fantastic combination of the rhythms of Gershwin's words and the improvisations of Joe Pass.
That was Embraceable You by Joe, played by Joe Pass. So after Manchester, what happened then? How long did you stay teaching in Manchester?
Three years, I think, yes. Then I moved around to different cities, one or two jobs in different parts of England. And eventually, having worked in a school in Yorkshire for 6 years, my wife and I decided we'd take the plunge and go abroad. So we went abroad. We went to Thailand for a couple of years. We'd got fed up with people saying, "Where are you going for your holiday this year?" And we're going to Mallorca. It was at the beginning of the sort of rush to the fish and chip belt of southern Spain. And she was delighted to be able to say, "We're going to Bangkok, actually."
What sort of job was that? Teaching?
Teaching, yeah. I was teaching down in the south of Thailand.
Teaching Thai children?
Teaching Thai children.
What, English?
English in two government schools, yeah.
So 2 years there, then did you come to Hong Kong?
No, went back to England and had another baby. I didn't, my wife did. And settled down for another 10 years or so until the travelling bug bit us again and we decided we would go overseas. A job came up in Hong Kong.
How long ago is that now?
73.
So, you've been here ever since?
Mm.
Always at Island School?
Yes.
And what are you teaching there?
I'm teaching English and drama.
And still doing a bit of acting as well?
No, not very much, no. No, I don't do anything like as much acting as I'd like to have done. When we came to Hong Kong, I was able to spend a bit of time with Garrison Players. I was chairman of Garrison Players for a year. And then I had the opportunity of doing two or three shows during the course of some arts festivals.
And what would your third choice of record be?
I'm fascinated by great performers like Joe Pass and Kiri Te Kanawa. And because English is the subject that I particularly like, English literature, there's a poem by Edith Sitwell set by William Walton, Old Sir Fawke.
Kiri Te Kanawa singing Old Sir Fawke. So, Leslie, you've now spent about 13 years at Island School. Have you seen many changes in the young people, or do they really stay the same?
No, children don't change. Children are the same in Hong Kong and in England. In Hong Kong, they appear more sophisticated, but they still have the same needs and the same talents and the same enthusiasm as children everywhere. And the kids at Island School are super. They're terrific. They're great to get on with. There's a good rapport between the students and staff.
What's the range of nationalities? They're mostly expatriates, are they?
Yes, they're mostly expatriates. But expatriates in a much broader sense than we use it normally. They're expatriates from almost any country in the world that you can mention, except Greenland. There are dozens and dozens and dozens of native languages, and places as far apart as Norway and Fiji. And, you know, it's a vast intake of nationalities.
Which education system is it based on?
It's based on the British English, should I say, and the exams we do are mainly London University based exams, but some of the other exam boards in England, GCE,
yeah.
Now moving on to GCSE,
yes,
at 16 plus, and still with A-levels and entry to British universities. They do, of course, a lot of them go to other universities. Some of them go to India, some go to Australia, New Zealand, and a lot go to American colleges and
do
universities.
Do they recognise the English qualifications, then, their GCE, for entrance to university?
Yes.
Yeah.
But in every country in the world.
How did you get into television? I'm sure everyone would like to know.
I suppose it was through amateur acting, really. I was chairman of Garrison Players, and I took some young ladies over who thought that they might like to do weather presenting over at one of the television stations. And while I was there, the producer said, would you like to have a go at this? And I said, yeah, I don't mind. I'll speak into the microphone or I'll look at the camera. And he said, could you come back next week in a suit? Because I'd gone looking particularly scruffy. And then he said, would I like to work full-time? And I said, how much do you pay? And he told me, and I said, no, I wouldn't like to work full-time. And so I just took on occasional part-time work with them, and then I established myself as a regular presenter in a couple of years later.
Well, let's move on to your fourth choice of music.
Well, the last record dealt with the way in which people can get such fun out of language. Edith Sitwell's manipulation of English words. And I've always been a fan of French. From when I was at school, I used to imitate the French teacher. I don't think I learned a lot of French, but I had some great fun imitating the French teacher. And when I came to Hong Kong, been settled here for a little while, I decided to brush up my school French to do something about it. So I went down to the Alliance Française and started doing some reading. And it was from that that I picked up a Jacques Brel record. And this is a lovely story of a young man who goes out to visit his girlfriend and takes her bonbon instead of flowers, because flowers die and the bonbon last. And I love the character and the fun. One of Jacques Brel's lighter moments, but not without its touch of pathos. It's the clown. It's the clown's image of him feeling very strongly, but making light of life.
Je vous ai apporté des bonbons parce que les fleurs c'est périssable. Bien que les fleurs soient plus présentables, surtout quand elles sont en bouton à l'air.
That was Jacques Brel with Les Bonbons. Well, I'd like to talk a bit about television now, Leslie. How many years have you been at it?
I beg your pardon?
How many
Could
years?
Could you rephrase have, that, please?
How many years have you been appearing before the cameras?
Oh, quite a few. I don't like to go into exact figures. Maybe about eight. Something.
And
like.
You've settled now into the regular news reading slot at the weekends.
Yes, unless somebody's sick, I stick to the weekend. If somebody's ill or away at a meeting or something, I don't mind going in to do the main news. But I don't like staying too late.
How long before the broadcast do you have to get in there? I mean, is there a lot of preparation involved?
You have to have a look, a close look at your scripts. So I try to get in about an hour beforehand so that I can get ready, have a look through the scripts and check the pronunciations of any names I'm not quite sure of, places and so on.
Do you use an auto cue?
Yes, we do use an auto cue.
Because sometimes we can see you look down. Is that just to check something that isn't, or is it just...
Well, everything isn't on auto cue, because the actual story is that you're reading. If you're reading a main story, then the introduction is on auto cue and the rest of the story is on a script. Then, of course, we like to be able to kid people that we're not reading from an auto cue. That's the art of it. So they can't see your eyes move. If they see your eyes move, then you failed as a presenter.
Have you had any disasters? I mean, have you misread things?
I misread very often. I had the opening of a new road over in the New Territories at one time, the last 5 millimetres of which cost $6 billion. And I should have said the last 5 kilometres, but not very many people noticed, I don't think. Just a little while ago, I announced the wrong day. I told them it was the 14th instead of the 13th, or the 13th instead of the 14th, which created a great deal of amusement in the control room. But I hadn't noticed, so I just swept on regardless.
And I suppose it's better not to correct yourself and draw attention to your own mistakes.
Well, you couldn't very well say, oh, I'm sorry, but it should have been the 12th and not the 13th. I mean, you feel such an idiot if you do that anyway.
Let's have another choice of record.
Yeah. I do a lot of my listening on a sort of portable, personal listening device, the name of which we weren't...
A Walkman.
We don't like to say Walkman, because that's like saying a Hoover. I get into a terrible habit of listening to the same thing over and over and over again, because you don't want to change it, and you keep turning the tape over. And it's in a way, a bad habit. In another way, it's a great habit, because you can enjoy the same thing over and over again. But I'd like you to play This Can't Be Love, and this features three of the greatest jazz musicians in the world. Lionel Hampton on vibes. If the vibes hadn't been invented, then Lionel Hampton would have invented them. It's like Saint-Exupéry in the aeroplane. Art Tatum, who is an absolutely fantastic pianist. Art Tatum was recommended to me by my brother when he was in New York many years ago, who was at a nightclub, and Art Tatum was playing, and he wrote me a letter immediately saying, I must get into... No, that wasn't the phrase in those days. I must listen to people like Artie Shaw, Art Tatum, and men of that ilk, one of these phrases that offends Scots purists, but it's a phrase that's gone into the English language, and it's just rather a nice phrase. And on drums, Buddy Rich, as the jazz DJs say, the incomparable Buddy Rich. This Can't Be Love.
That superb musicianship was playing This Can't Be Love. As a television personality, do you find people come up to you in the street and say, oh, you're Leslie Clark, I saw you on the telly last night?
No, occasionally someone stands next to me in a lift and says, hello, thinking that I work at their office, or I'm a visitor who came in to see them the other day. They're not quite sure who you are, just know they know you. So some people in the street do a double take, but most people are very polite. They don't stare, and very few people buttonhole you, except at cocktail parties when they ask things like, do you use an auto cue, and
questions I've asked you tonight.
Sorry.
Have there been any disasters in the studio when you perhaps the auto cue stopped and you really haven't known what to do next?
Yeah, sometimes one freezes. I have it on occasions, just frozen like you would on the stage. But when you freeze for a couple of seconds on television,
that seems like an eternity, really is.
But
there are two newsreaders, aren't there? Can the camera then get on to the other one?
Well, they're in a bit of a fix because they don't know whether to press the button or not. Because the other one isn't probably not ready. She might be doing her hair or... No, that's a bit male chauvinist. The other one may just not be ready. I mean, you can't just press a button. I mean, if I come to the end of the news and I say, and now we have... and I can't remember who the name... I can't remember what the name of the weather girl is. Then you just sort of freeze for a moment, and it's quite a horrible feeling. We had a super mess-up one evening when we had to go in because of some story being late, without any scripts at all, and I had the scripts being fed to me from the floor by the producer on his hands and knees as he was sorting them out, and gave me one script at a time just below camera level, but nobody would have noticed, I hope.
And of course sometimes they put the wrong video film on, don't they?
Not on my station.
What do your pupils think about it? Are they so used to you being on television now they don't bother to mention it?
A lot of them mention it. Some of them don't notice for maybe 12 months. And then they will say, because I'm a very different personality at school, they'll very often say, is it you that does that? You're not the one who does that. Are you? And I always say, no, it's my brother. And they say, oh. They go away and they come back and say, it is you, isn't it? So sometimes they notice. Sometimes they don't. It's two lives, and I like to be. I find it's great fun to be involved with both sides of the world. I love to be involved with the people at the television station. It's another dimension, and of course, being a teacher and working with children, producing plays, helping to produce plays. This is. Fascinating life. It's beautiful.
And really a natural extension of perhaps your acting interests and your interest in English to actually be a performer, because even a newsreader, you are performing, aren't you?
Yes, you've got to perform in a certain way. You've got to be in a certain controlled way a performer. I'm not acting a part of a newsreader, I hope. I'm just trying to be as straightforward as I possibly can be.
Can we come on to another choice of music now, Leslie?
Rumba. Flamenca, Paco Peña. Paco Peña was working at the City Hall on the same night that we were performing a review, a late-night review, starting at 11 o'clock. And we asked him if he'd like to come up to the house and join our after-show party. And astonishingly, he and his two men came up and sat and had a drink or two, and I presented him with a cheap Japanese guitar, and he sat in one of my peacock chairs and played and people danced, and one of his gypsy singers sang and danced, and it was a memorable evening, so I'd love to hear that again.
Lively piece was Rumba Flamenco played by Paco Peña. Well, we're coming to the end of the programme, sadly, Leslie. What's the future hold for you? Or what would you like the future to hold?
I'd love to stay in Hong Kong for a little while to see how things go. I'm still teaching and still working on television. I'm open to offers. I don't want the governorship of the Cayman Islands, but...
Are there other countries you'd like to visit? Do you enjoy travel?
Love to travel. I've loved my travels in Asia, and it's been great to be able to get back to Europe and go into one or two European countries. That's always been a happy time for me.
Are your family all grown up now, your children?
Youngest one is 21.
Oh, that's grown up. Yeah. Well, what would the last choice be, as we have come... Run out of time?
Well, run out of time, we go back in time, in fact. I'm thinking about my youth, and I'd like to hear Sinatra sing Come Fly With Me. I'm told that the line originally in the song, which says, if you could use some exotic booms, was if you could use some exotic views, according to Sammy Kahn, who wrote the words. This may be an apocryphal story, but... He gave him two versions because he thought one might not get too many plays on the air in some of the rather more strict states.
Come fly with me for a flying honeymoon, they say.
Fly With Me, sung by old Blue Eyes himself, it does bring this programme to an end. My guest has been Leslie Clark, television newsreader and schoolmaster of Island School, Hong Kong.
You have been listening to Shambles Asia Cast, a podcast series created by Chris Smith. www.shambles.net/podcasting. The music heard in this series is from Magnatune. www.magnatune.com.
It's out there somewhere. The trick is finding it.